It is Saturday, February 3rd, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, 3D gaming modifications, and of course our Week in Geek news segment, followed by your questions and comments of technology.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our program are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our show, we're going to start with some geek news, as we do every week. Then we're going to talk with two guys from Noesis, a company in Aptos that focuses on training and development, well, personal development of 3D games. So they teach you how to modify your own gaming content. It's kind of the next generation in gaming. You are a participant in the creation of the art. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join the conversation. The phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, those numbers I'll give out to you when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, he's a technical marketing manager at NVIDIA, and Miles Elam, who's jobless. Miles, congratulations on not having a job anymore. I know it's a long time coming.
I know.
See, now Mic 4 just doesn't work. All right, grab Mic 3, and then while Sean's talking, you can switch over.
Now that I have my mic on, thank you.
You bet.
I was just going to mention that it is a really difficult thing to lose your job.
What do you mean lose your... You know where it is. You left.
I did leave. That's true. But, I mean, it's... I'm just saying that, you know, it's really difficult to not go to work anymore.
Wait a minute. Your last day was yesterday. So today's a Saturday. What are you talking about?
Hey, try that other mic.
Okay, I'm trying the other mic.
There we go.
Oh, it's beautiful. Okay.
There we go.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, so you've quit your job. You've saved up some money. You're going back to school. English teacher. Elementary school, high school?
High school and middle school.
You're leaving a high-paying job in tech to become a high school English teacher.
Yes, in California.
If I work really hard for the next couple of years, I will be able to make one-third the amount of money I made before.
But your soul will be clean. Is that the idea?
I like to think that I wash up. I can't speak for you, but yeah.
All right. Let's get on to the geek.
I think you'll be doing harder work.
We're going to do quick geek news today. We'll start, Sean, with you. What's going on in the Vista world? The world of Mike, or you know.
Well, you can go to a store now and buy it.
You can buy it officially.
Yes.
Now, we talked a little bit about this before the show. We're not really that interested in talking about Vista, but you actually use it at work, so I think that's kind of interesting. You have to test things all the time on hardware.
Yeah, I have it on multiple platforms.
Is it stable?
So all our cutting edge stuff for both AMD and Intel, I'm running it. Yeah, I haven't had any problems at all. No, I haven't had any problems. It's been running really well.
Good.
And I've been doing a lot of, ripping out drivers, putting in new ones, running benchmarks.
Okay, so from a stability...
I haven't really played games yet. I haven't had a chance to really sit down and play games. But I've watched them, the benchmarks run, and they seem to run just fine.
And these are 3D benchmarks, so it's testing the hardware.
Yeah.
So
it's game-based benchmarks.
Are you recommending it to your parents?
I haven't really recommended it to anybody.
Okay, good.
But it hasn't been out long enough.
Yeah.
It just came out on Tuesday.
All right, thanks. We've covered Vista officially. Thank you. Next news story, Miles.
I mean, that's the news this week is Vista.
Well, there's
and then Miles
things.
Doesn't have a job. Okay, what else, huh?
Yeah.
So we were talking earlier, the final Harry Potter book was announced on Thursday. Amazon orders were up 547% over the predecessor, the last book. In one day, they sold more books in one day than they did the last book in 2 weeks.
Have you bought it?
No. but I will. Michael Dell is now back as CEO of Dell.
He left.
Well, no, he's always been there as chairman of the board.
Right.
But now he is back running the company on a daily basis.
Is he going to try to become successful again?
When they made the announcement, he was back on the job.
Right.
They kicked the old guy out. And, actually, I don't know the reason why the other guy left, but I think it probably has something to do with their earnings being significantly down.
Time to get back in and make it all work.
So their
again.
Stock was down something like 14 cents on the news, and he came back, and their stock shot up like 70, 80 cents just on the news
just
that Michael Dell is back in the chair. So,
all right. Any other headlines?
Yeah, there's a California lawmaker wants to ban incandescent light bulbs in the state of California.
What? All the ones that are installed
by the year 2012.
For selling new ones,
they're
assuming?
Calling it the "How many legislators does it take to change a light bulb act?" Brilliant.
The idea being, of course, that incandescents are pretty inefficient, especially considering LED and fluorescence. I can't stand fluorescent light bulb replacements. At your house, Sean, you've got all of them because you're like, you care about the environment, which I appreciate. But when you turn on your closets in your house, you got to wait a second.
Yeah,
like a kid screaming,
crazy.
"I want peanuts!" And you got to go in there. And you're like,
"Oh, lights just not fluorescent.
The lights just aren't white.
The LEDs are great. Yeah,
except that the LEDs aren't bright enough yet. You have to put in more of them to get the same."
See, I've got good night vision, so I'm okay with it.
But, you know, if you come to my house, you will only find those light bulbs, those fluorescents in closets, in the bathroom.
The ones that
wherever there are books in my house, I have incandescent light bulbs because, frankly, I like my books. So that's one of the problems that
if you really like them,
LEDs,
that
won't
really
be a problem. Yeah, but
those
are so expensive.
All right, so there's a legislation in California, the idea being that we would get rid of all incandescent lights, which is normal light bulbs, and you'd have to buy newer light bulbs that are more expensive because it's better for the environment, better for the energy consumption.
And it would just be another pioneering environmental effort by the state of California.
He wants it on his curriculum, Bertha. All right, thank
you. So cutting edge.
Thank you very much, Sean. Are we done with news?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much, geeks. Miles and Sean Cleveland, the geeks here today doing news. Now, we got two people from Noesis, Aptos companies. Yeah, I think that's right. And Case and Antonio, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Morning.
So you guys make software, well, mostly training videos to teach people how to participate in their game environments, modifying games. And the gaming industry, of course, is this massive industry now. And for years, the geeks and I, we get together and we do LAN parties. And we always want to be able to make the environment more like what we would play, what we see. So you guys help do that.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a big thing that that people have expressed interest in, you know, even going beyond that, actually putting your own face on the character, running around in your office, your house, and, you know, being part of that game is most you can, you know, just your own house shooting the guy next to you, which might not really be the best thing, but it's fun.
Case, I take it you're a gamer. You do a lot of gaming?
Yeah, I'm a big gamer.
And you're a graduate UCSC in film.
That's right.
So you're also interested in the gaming environments in that they are virtual environments you could actually do film work in.
Yeah, there's actually some pretty amazing things you can do with the camera in these games. I mean, basically, the ones and zeros you got running the game are everything you can imagine. You can place your camera one place, looking at me. You could decide later, you know, you actually don't like me. You want to shoot Antonio here. Move the camera later on after everything's been finished and just change everything about the world there. So it's pretty powerful stuff.
And are there tools and such that you can script a piece? Like, can one person make a complete film with some voiceover work and have a complete film in this environment?
Yeah, actually, there's a brand now called Machinima, which actually is filmmaking with video game engines. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's some pretty powerful tools.
Machinima? That's the term of it, right?
Yeah, Machinima is how it's been labeled thus far. there's a lot of different varieties. I mean, people just doing straight, filming what's on screen and doing their own voice work after the fact. You can actually record the voice work and have it, you know, live within the game. You can do scripted animations, so you know, things actually run in real time, and you can actually have user input to change those scripted animations as you go.
I see a lot of my day job is working at UCSC, and I do I work in a program called Digital Arts New Media, and it's an MFA program. And some of the work we do, dissection, you know, there's a lot of history look at digital art and new media, and we see films done by Machinima. It's a common thing in a class for the, you know, history of film or history of digital arts, new media film. Somebody will show a piece, and so I see a lot of this kind of work, and it's appealing to me, of course, because I think all of us in this generation are used to growing up with video cameras and there's always that weekend where everyone decides to make a film. So everyone's got these like little films they've made in the past. And of course, the biggest flaw to these films, we used to do sci-fi stuff, is that the environments were always, you know, someone's garage, or if we got lucky, we got filmed in the minivan. And so you've got this horrible look to them with, of course, a lot of passion involved.
Right.
So now people are able to do this passion in these amazing scapes.
Yeah, and the engines that run these games, we don't want to take the gaming aspect out of it, because really, you know, you can do both, and you can actually have both running simultaneously. But the 3D engines that are running, you know, today's and next generation games are you know, basically photorealistic and getting even, you know,
getting better every day.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can have these environments with real particle effects, with, you know, everything running real time with amazing physics, you know, and you can put endless characters within that world.
Okay, so in the Machinima that I've seen, a lot of it is guys with guns with masks on, their heads are bobbing up and down, and they're running around with guns, but they're having conversations about art, or they're having conversations about society, but they still have a gun and they still can shoot each other. So what about like being able to make it look less like a first-person shooter?
Completely, yeah. I mean, that's you could have a huge alien, you could have, you know, a big fox with wings.
Okay, so let's say I want to get a fox with wings in there. How do you do that? How do you actually modify some character or something to make it what you want?
Well, basically, that's where video game art starts, from the design of a character. If you think about a character, and then you actually start creating the geometry, the character himself. That's where the texture begins, the modeling, the texture, and then you export a character to a different game engine.
And that's what the products that we really have out right now cover. I mean, we're starting off in the art world. So you actually use these 3D software, starting with XSI, a program from Softimage, which, you know, is basically right on par, if not above, some of your other programs like Maya and Max, to actually create, like Antonio is saying, that 3D geometry that is your character's, you know, form, body.
Now, when you start talking about this, it brings up massive films like Cars or, you know, the Pixar films. And I start associating pretty quickly that, you know, when you see the extra DVD footage on Shrek or something, you'll see the people working on these models and how the faces are made, mistakes that happen, and there's whole teams of people creating the artwork for these films, and we're seeing a lot of them come out, so there's a lot of people doing this, but it always looks extremely technical and hard. And I've tried to just modify the environments in the mapping software that normally comes with games. You can put buildings in different places.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually start modeling a character, you've got all this different stuff to talk about. You've got the skeleton structure and the joints. And that's all, you can do that all in something like XSI?
Right, yeah. And, you know, there is this perception that it is incredibly hard. And, you know,
No, it's not a perception. there's a fact that it's incredibly hard. Okay, so
it's not. We really, you know, we try to bring it down and simplify it somewhat. So, you mean, it is. There's a lot to know. There's always going to be that. But really, you know, if you're focused on one area or a few areas and you really, you know, you learn just about the bones and just about the skin, you know, you can really tackle it in, you know, a weekend, really, and get some basics. And then, of course, like any, you know, kind of art, you know, you get better and you learn tricks of the trade.
So you currently have, like, two DVDs out. They're both called, they're in this umbrella of modding your world. Mod is modification of gaming. It's a common term in gaming. And your DVDs, Gnosis Interactive, Character Design and Integration, and 3D content creation. So which is the first? What's the first
3D
step?
Content creation is the first.
Okay.
And yeah, modding is getting bigger and bigger. So the first disc there actually is in XSI, teaching you just
okay,
the
so
fundamentals.
Okay, so XSI by Softimage, and it's equivalent to these other games, like 3D Max, I mean, other engines, like 3D Max and stuff.
Of the 3D software
Is it really
packages.
Expensive?
The software itself is actually the cheapest of the big players.
Okay, and that's kind of why you're using it.
Well, you know, actually, the main reason we're using XSI is because it's the software that Valve used to create Half-Life 2.
Okay, so it's been used a lot.
Yeah, and it's used in this industry, and it's gaining strength. It also, they have a version called the Mod Tool, and that's actually a free version you can download right now online that's going to let you do anything that we're showing you in the disc, and anything you're going to do as far as modding is concerned, and that's just completely
now,
free.
Now, this disc, though, does have Softimage. It's for Windows only. Most gaming systems really are Windows-based. Do you get the XSI on this DVD partially? Or
We have a 30-day trial included on the disc. You can actually like I say, download the Mod Tool version. They have new versions coming out a lot, and they're, you know, pretty small downloads, really. They have some powerful tools.
Okay, so let's say I want to just recreate my house in this game and be able to run my character around it. That's all I want to do. Is that something I can do in the mod engine?
That's something that these discs are going to show you exactly how you can do.
Okay, so that's pretty exciting. We get a lot of calls about, you know, my kid wants to make games, whatever. One of the things that keeps on running into is these games, and people aren't familiar with these first-person shooters because they get turned off by the content so quickly, but these worlds are beautiful. I mean, there's game, every game that comes out, the gamers get in there and like, wow, look at the particle effects, look at the distance, look at the shrubbery moving. I remember running around in a game a few years ago, I think it was, I can't recall what it was, showing my mother, who's an oil painter, and I was like, isn't this amazing? And showing her, you know, I could look at my feet, look around the sky and everything, and of course the guy comes over the hill, and I'm like, oh, hang on just a second, I had to blow his head off. And so there's this, and of course she was very turned off by that, but liked the idea of the artwork. So how, is somebody released like, here's a mod just to play in these worlds, there's no guns, they just yank all the guns out. Is that easy to do?
You know, there's actually some mods out there that just help you mod more. And there's some mods that completely change the game itself. I mean, take away the guns. Puzzle games are really popular nowadays. There's actually Portal and some other games coming out by Valve using the same engine. A lot of games run on the same engine, and we're starting to expand our feature set as far as engines. But yeah, plenty of puzzle games, plenty of adventure games and stuff all run on even some of these 3D shooter engines because of the particle effects and all the stuff you mentioned.
Antonio, you're an artist, a 3D artist. Would that be an appropriate term for what you do?
Uh-huh. Okay.
If you worked on actual release games, or have you always been someone that does the modding?
No, I've always worked on more of the training side of it.
The training side,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you're a certified trainer in Softimage XSI suite, and this DVD basically features you teaching people how to use it.
Yeah. Actually, I taught in a school in Mexico. I opened the Fiction Lab Animation School, where I taught video game art and design. And that's where I realized like the potential of this, because we actually modeled the school, all my students, all the school. We had like the blueprints from the school, so we built it ground up, and then we actually built a character inside, which were also the students.
Now, did you do this inside Softimage XSI?
Yeah, everything inside XSI.
And then can you load it in the Half-Life?
Yeah. They actually there's a nice exporter. You can actually export the characters, the geometry, everything. Put it inside each little hammer. The game itself, it comes with it. It's called the SDK, which is a software developer kit. So it's really good. You buy the game and you have the SDK included.
And this kit basically is designed so that you can kind of participate in the creation of the work. I mean, the gaming companies are supporting this by releasing their software development kits.
Right. Yeah. More and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great.
So is it when you taught that class, is that like it was a semester class and people could actually make a character?
It was actually a 10-month master course. So, yeah, my students actually went crazy with it. So it's nice to see a reaction, like they get really involved. And that's when I thought about this, because the project is... I mean, you can see that, all the students really getting involved, and I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to, like, we separate into, like, okay, art, some will do the characters, some will do the school itself. So by the end of the school year, like, everybody was running around playing, shooting each other, you know, picking up the computers and throwing at other people, so it was really fun.
In the UCSD just released a focus in game development in their computer science department.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of talk, and there's now an upper division degree, gaming studies. And part of the class structure is to set up groups of people, and theoretically they'll produce a game, and some person will focus on the artwork. And we're trying to do more of the relation of this computer science development, 3D game modeling, to the arts at the school. And I think most people, if you spend a couple hours with someone who's very into the subject, anybody can kind of understand that at some point down the line, we will be doing a lot more 3D environment stuff. I mean, MySpace will exist in a 3D world, and you'll be interacting in that way. And when you start seeing modifications of games, that's when it really clicks. What got you involved in 3D modeling, Antonio?
Well, I've been working with 3D environments, say like for 10 years now. So I don't know. First, I actually went to a computer conference called SIGGRAPH that was back in 1996. And I was interviewed by Disney, and they actually wanted to... they were hiring people using Softimage, and I didn't have Softimage. But that time, I started using the Amiga.
You started using what?
A Commodore Amiga computer.
Amiga, okay.
Yeah, you know, doing animations.
Sure.
And Lightwave and Imagine and all that stuff. But I had no access to high-end software tools at that time, which was Softimage, and it was called Alias Wavefront. So then I get back to Mexico, and I started... looking for a company who has Softimage, and then that's why I got into Softimage and all the 3D really like high end. And the good thing about right now is like even software, the 3D software is free. They become like really user friendly, like the learning curves.
The mod version from Softimage is free.
The mod version is free.
Uh-huh.
And you have all the tools. Basically, they put it out there for people that they don't want to make any profit out of it. It's just like to create mods and
Yeah, know. It's interesting how much mods are happening where it's kind of a group effort. They do the mod, and then they may not even sell or anything. They might just go like, yeah, it's free to download. Go ahead and play with
it. It's really nice because you buy a game, you play the game, and then you finish the game and you want to play more, and then just go up on the web and look for the mods for those games, and you can keep on playing that game.
And if you're interested in getting into game development, I mean, modding right now is the ticket in. I mean, a lot of these games coming out, like I was talking about Portal, were actually projects by college kids modding Half-Life 2. I mean, Counter-Strike, which is an immensely popular game right now, is a mod of Half-Life 2. And these kids get, you know, basically picked up or just opportunities.
So they produce a whole environment where all of them are working together like a small
software development
company.
Yeah, 4 or 5, maybe 10 people working on it.
And they produce a package that's so rich and such an appealing package that a major company will actually buy them, hire them and make that a real release of a
game. Exactly.
It's a guaranteed winner because other people have already put out the outlay and actually made the game. It's just, okay, well, we'll give you some money to actually make a whole bunch more money off of it.
Right. Well, right now, the thing is, you know, you get these game companies spending, you know, it's like you're talking about, it's like Hollywood, you know, spending hundreds, you know, $50 million, $100 million on these games. And so the innovation level drops because suddenly you have, you know, okay, we're going to do, you know, Unreal 6 because, you know, that's going to be money.
Because the other ones
maker.
Worked.
Right. And people like them, you know, so the innovation level kind of drops. You get these, you know, people that, you know, have some creative ideas, and like you said, the technology for the engine already exists. You don't have to do that kind of tools programming, the physics programming. You just use it a better way.
But even from the company standpoint, the risk increases too when you have those budgets, because mm-hmm. then it has to be a moneymaker, and exactly. there also be plenty of games that they release that just don't sell
well. It's very similar to the pop films where they put, you know, $50 million into they put a whole bunch of money into making a really successful film. They don't take the risk. They don't make the storyline any different than the standard Hollywood story. Mm-hmm. So. With these, you keep on talking about this game that was kind of like a puzzle game that's being released. What's it called again?
Yeah, Portal. You know, it's probably because I'm really excited about it, but it's basically they've taken...
And it's half on Half-Life 2 engine.
Exactly.
What's the engine of Half-Life 2 called?
It's called the Source Engine.
Mm-hmm.
They use it for actually a wide variety of games. This game, Dark Messiah Might and Magic, actually uses the Source Engine, the newest version of it.
And any game you buy that uses the Source Engine, you actually have the ability to then start modding.
Yes, Valve
but
is really good at
that. If you
want
to release a new version and sell stuff, you actually have to license that engine from them. That's kind of how it works.
Right.
So
exactly.
For people developing their own stuff, great. It's kind of like you just buy the game, which is under $100. Okay, so Portal, what is this game that they created out of Half-Life 2 Engine?
So, like you say, instead of using a gun and going around shooting people, they've actually taken, you know, the implement of the gun and creating this device that launches a portal. And you basically set your in portal and your out portal, and you have to reach an objective, and you can drop through one portal into the other. And it's, you know, you watch the demo in use, and it's just staggering the amounts of ways. If you actually had a portal, you know, what you could do, how you could use
it. So the idea is that you can create a portal from it at a distance. So you're up on a cliff, you open a portal up there, and you open a portal in front of you, you jump through the portal, you're up on
and
the
you're
cliff.
At the top. Exactly.
So basically it's a navigation game where you have to figure out how to move yourself around. Mm-hmm. And that's the game.
That's it.
And is it a multiplayer? Or is it a single player?
You know, right now it's single player. There's talks about how they're going to make it.
But there's no... If it was multiplayer, it would be a race.
Yeah. And it could be pretty fun.
So have you seen some of it? Have you played with this?
We've seen a lot of demos. You just kind of looked at the pictures they have online and stuff.
It's great because I hadn't heard of this until you just mentioned it, but it seems like such a perfect implementation of a shooting game because, of course, it is still, you know, you're still shooting. It's just that you're not doing violence. You're doing opening of things.
Right.
It's a great idea. Okay, so we're talking with two lead people from – what's your titles at this company?
Yeah, kind of co-creators and developers here. Yeah.
Great. All right, so the company is Noesis, and it's I guess it's Noesis Interactive. You're right. In Aptos, and this is Antonio and Case, and we are taking your calls and questions on technology today. You're welcome to call us about anything you'd like. I'll even open up the lines for, you know, your hard drive's broken and you need help, because we can help with that, and we will. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. Stay with KOSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. We're taking your calls with questions and comments on technology. We'll take anything you'd like. And here are the phone numbers. Ready? 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-KUSP. And if you'd like to do this through email, you're welcome to send us email, geeks@geekspeak.org. Our website's down because I guess we're just not that geeky. But if you'd like to email us, geeks@geekspeak.org. But I urge you to call us up. In the 831 area code, it's an easy phone number to dial, 476-2800. Or, of course, all in California, you can call us at our 800 number, 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Cruzeo, providing local internet services, including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruzeo membership is available online at cruzeo.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to GeekSpeak on KUSP. I'm Lyle Troxell. We have Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam. The Geeks will help you with anything you'd like. And we also have our guest today from Noice Interactive, Antonio Govila and Case Norland. Please call us up with questions and comments about technology. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I think I've said these numbers way too many times. So while we're waiting for people to get into our into the air room with us, I asked Antonio what you how you got involved. Case, film major, how did you get involved with game development?
I've been a gamer for a long time. Yeah, you know, I just grew up playing a bunch of games, mostly PC games. I kind of ended my console days back in Super Nintendo 2, sadly. But, you know, started doing some modding, some level design with a group for Duke Nukem 3D, which was a fantastic new game where you could actually jump in a first-person shooter. And, you know, then was...
rather than Doom.
Yeah. And then, you know, was kind of taken with some of these other games like Quake and stuff with people doing mods. I mean, level design, we talked about some weapon design with the grappling hook, which just blew me away as far as how it changed the way that someone played a game.
The basic idea is they hear that for the grappling hook, it's a great idea of a mod that just kind of exploded and showed up all over the place. But basically, these first-person shooters, you run around with weapons and you kill other people against your side, and the grappling hook was just a launching of a cable that attached to things, and you could swing from it and move around like you had a big grappling hook. Very artificial in the gravity sense, but it worked.
And it completely changed the way that people played the game.
Yeah. It made the world a different way to navigate.
Exactly.
Kind of like this Portal game. But it still has a lot of guns and shooting,
right,
which is always not very appealing to parents. Like, you know, prior to having kids, I was like, oh, whatever, you know, you get into it. But now I'm like, yeah, my 5-year-old, I really don't want him going around killing people. But I like the idea of the Portal game. I'll definitely have to try that for him.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other games. I mean, you know, there's a lot of the strategy games that actually you can mod. Battlefield and stuff is a popular one. And those developers, to their credit, see the potential and are giving you more and more of the tools. They're using, you know, exactly the same tools in some cases they used to make the game. So they have a lot of power there to change things.
What do you think about the artwork that's being created in these games? I mean, the original artwork, if you will. Is it pretty? Is it, you know...
Yeah, I mean, some's better than others, but...
are you seeing stuff you're like, wow, they did something amazing with this engine and this is an incredible environment?
Yeah, you're getting really close to, you know, I mean, you might not be quite to the Pixar level we mentioned earlier yet in video games, but, you know, it'll be there soon, and that to me is just staggering because this is real time.
All right, I can't see Rick. You guys were having trouble with Yahoo, so can somebody introduce one of the phone conversations, phone line invites? Miles, you want to do that?
Line one, Cynthia from Santa Cruz. Need to get a different operating
system.
Well,
let's find it. Cynthia? Hi, Cynthia. What's up?
Hi. I have a really old operating system, Windows 97. I want to upgrade. I was thinking, oh, can I buy the software package somewhere and just come home and do it, and will the new files overwrite the old Windows files or
not? You currently
not?
Have what version of Windows?
Don't laugh. 97.
Doesn't exist.
98?
98.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good.
I was close.
First stress hurdle release. Gone over. Okay, so you got 98 and you want to upgrade your system. When did you buy your computer?
It was given to me.
So. Okay. I'd be concerned that you might not be able to run the most recent operating system on your computer. So that's the first thing you want to make sure that you actually meet the minimum requirements, if you will. And then you'd want to get Windows XP, I think, at this point. I don't think you want to get Vista, because Vista wouldn't really give you anything on older hardware. Sean, how hard is it to install Vista over Windows 98?
I have not done an upgrade.
You've never done an upgrade? You just install fresh?
Yeah.
That's a shame, because it...
Of course, I don't do QA.
What do you mean install fresh?
You can either install the operating system just by itself on a bare hard drive, or you can install over an existing version of Windows. And that's what he means by...
But both versions are available.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I prefer to do. I mean, I don't have to go in and delete all the existing Windows files
Yeah, that should be fine. I've not heard of any problems with updating... or upgrading Windows XP to Vista. The only problem is
Windows 98.
Windows 98.
I mean, I can't hear both of you talking.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Windows 98.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you can install XP over Windows 98 by just inserting the disk and running the main application, and it will reboot your machine and it will do its deal. And there's problems all the time with this kind of thing. But it's the best way to do it. So it's not like it's going to be easy. I would say it's going to take some time for you, and it's not going to be an enjoyable experience. I also am really concerned that you're not going to get, I mean, you're going to get better security out of it, but you're not going to necessarily get better performance. Do you know some statistics on your computer?
Not off the top of my head. I did write down some statistics because I was looking into them because I wanted to get the a DSL line, I guess, through whoever, Comcast or somebody or AT&T, and I discovered that I didn't have all the statistics because I had the 98 operating system.
Right. Yeah,
that would support it.
The ISPs, the Internet Service Providers, want you to have Windows XP at least running on your Windows machine rather than 98. And I think we've said in the past that you, of course, can just use 98 with their DSL service. It's not going to be a problem, but it's such a better idea to have XP because it's so much more secure, or I should say, it's less insecure.
So does the back of the box at the store tell me what my minimum stats are?
Yeah, you could pay attention to those minimums. I'd make those minimums a little higher, just kind of inflate them by 10% on all of it, and then accept that. So what you want to do is you right-click using your right mouse button, the My Computer on your desktop, and you go to Properties. And that's going to tell you a bit about your computer right there, right in that screen. It'll tell you memory and such, right?
It'll tell you processor speed, the amount of memory you have in your system. You'll need to go to graphics properties to find out what kind of card you have.
But you know, there are different levels. Graphics card will work for XP.
Yeah, right. There are different levels of Vista. The home edition
doesn't
have the fancy.
We're not going to Vista. We're just going to XP.
I probably want the home edition. I mean,
Sean, you really want to get
fancy. You know what? I wouldn't do an upgrade from Windows 98 at all.
Really?
Personally,
what
no. You're just going to run into problems.
Well, see, I use the internet a lot, and it's just too slow with the dial-up connection. And I need to go.
I would recommend backing all of your data up first, no matter what you do. You might even, if you can afford it, buy a new hard drive, and they're not that expensive. And install the an operating system fresh on the new hard drive and make your current hard drive a backup of
it's
that.
It's a little technical to do this, but you can definitely do it. Yeah, that's a great way to go.
So there should be room in the machine for another hard drive unless they've completely filled it up with all the different hard drives.
Yeah, it really depends on where you get the machine from, but normally there's extra space for two extra drives in a machine.
But normally with Windows program, is it a function of the new program to overwrite the old 98 software so that it doesn't use more space, it just takes up the other file?
It's going to make a backup of 98. It's going to be huge.
You're going to have separate folders. All your old Win 98 stuff is most likely going to stay there. The files don't get upgraded.
Well, including the Windows 98 operating system?
The operating system, what they do is they do the upgrade path. They actually back up your old system so you could theoretically revert.
You'll be stuck with a bunch of old files.
Yeah. That's why the geeks normally make a new install and try to get rid of the stuff because it's kind of cluttery. You know, it's there's never a clean upgrade, in my opinion.
Well, here's a question. It's not clear to me.
All right.
Okay, so let's say I've installed the new XP in my system, and now I've got an icon on my desktop to click on to start my computer.
For your application.
My application for the new XP. Do I also still have an icon or something to click on if I wanted to start it in 98,
no.
Or does the 98 disappear?
It goes away. It will now boot into Windows XP, and theoretically all the applications that you already had installed in 98 will work in Windows XP. So basically it'll be a new skinning of your operating system. You won't notice much differences, but there'll be little things broken. Okay. I think Sean's recommendation is buying a new hard drive, putting a new hard drive in as the master drive, which is a little technical. I'm not going to get into it right now. And then installing fresh on there.
But in that scenario, you will not have access to your applications.
And you have to install all your applications.
They won't work, right? You'll have to reinstall.
No, thank you so much for the call. I'm sorry we're not more helpful. Good luck on your upgrading nightmares.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, Nancy from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's your question today?
I do consulting, and I now have a new client with their own email client server. So right now I'm using a PowerBook G4 with Entourage, and I like it very much. The only client servers I can use, client emails rather, I can use there are Eudora, Mozilla Thunderbird, or Apple Mail. So what do I do in order to, when I take my laptop to my client, how do I manage, it's a pain in the butt to have to manage. Excuse me for saying that.
Yeah, I think if you're happy with Entourage and you have your email address, you're going to keep that email address.
Yes.
Use Entourage for that email, and then go ahead and use Mail or Thunderbird for their email. So you'll set up two email clients, and you'll have your work, your client email and your non-client email. I guess
so.
Perfectly.
Is there a way to have? Then can I forward my original email address to the?
Yeah, who's your original email through?
SBC.
SBC. Okay, yeah. That might be a little more difficult then. But yeah, you should be able to forward your SBC email through to another address, and it will just all show up in this other place. But then you'll be moving from Entourage onto this new email client.
That's the trick. I don't want to do that. I can. The alternative is I can get my SBC email via
the web.
The web.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, can't Entourage do like POP3 or IMAP4?
I'm assuming it can, but the client doesn't want her to be using Entourage. Not sure.
They don't use that.
Yeah.
For Mac, they only use Eudora. I've used Eudora before.
Mm-hmm. So I see a lot of Eudora use at UCSC. I personally use Mail, and when I'm on a Windows machine, I use Thunderbird. So I'm pretty familiar with all of them.
Uh-huh.
I think if you're on a Macintosh, there's no reason not to use Mail. It's a great application, and it's part of the operating system. I mean, it comes with the operating system, so it's free. But Thunderbird's a really wonderful email client. So I think the migration over to those two is going to be great for you. And keeping your mail at SBC Global and checking it through the web while you're in the process of being with this new client is a great way to go. And then on that website, when you log in to check your mail through SBC Global, you should have a settings thing, and you'll be able to forward your mail from there. And that's the way to go. But do that after you know your new email address works. And thank you so much for the call.
Okay.
Thank you, Nancy. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I want to talk a little bit more about 3D environment stuff because we got these two experts here. So if you'd like to call in with questions about 3D game creation, artwork in 3D, any of that topic that we were kind of talking about earlier, please do so. We'll get you in the front of the queue, and we will take people's calls as we go. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877.
Alex had a question for the guests.
All right.
What are some of their favorite mods and why?
Good.
Ooh. Antonio, do you have any favorites?
Well, if you look at right now, it's moddb.com. That's a website where you can actually... this year they launched the Mod of the Year Awards.
Yep. Just happened a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and they have like... it was out of how many mods?
They had like 100 nominees. I mean, there was thousands of mods that they were out there with that.
Did they screenshots of them so you can kind of see what
they're
doing?
Yeah, exactly. And some of them have playable demos, all the websites and stuff.
Are these all games that are based on Half-Life? Or these?
No, there's the majority of the nominees actually were based on Half-Life. I think about 36 of the 100. But they were from a range of games, including non-first-person shooters.
So non-first-person shooters also have mod capabilities?
Exactly. A lot of them do. And you know, even games like The Sims and stuff, you know, you can do a lot of modding, actually, in The Sims, Sims 2. You know, if you've heard of Second Life, I mean, this is a game that's all about just creating an alternate world-based game. You make your own guy.
Yeah. I don't think Second Life has a plot, does it? I mean...
No, it's just walk around, talk to people. You know, it's basically social networking in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Antonio, so the question to you was, what's your favorite mod game, mod version that's out right now? Do you have one? Do you game much?
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of gaming. But recently, I've been playing Dark Messiah.
Is that a mod?
Magic. That's not a mod. It's actually, you feel kind of like a mod because it's based on the Half-Life 2 engine, on the Source engine.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point on, then it came to scene episode. So you basically feel it's like a mod from the game,
mm-hmm.
but it actually...
And that's called Dark...
Dark Messiah.
Dark Messiah, Mind Magic, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then I played the scene episodes a lot. I like that one a lot.
Now, The Sims, I mean, we talk about The Sims a lot in popular culture because this idea that you spend a lot of time in a virtual environment where you're living normal life,
mm-hmm.
it seems kind of antithetical to breathing. So why is it that it's so appealing? Why is The Sims so appealing to you?
No, actually, it was the Sin episode.
Oh, Sin!
Sorry about that.
Sin is good, though.
I actually tried playing it just for the sake of it. I downloaded Sims and tried playing it.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get hooked into it. I played it for a while, but then it was like, I'd rather, like, you know, first-person shooters.
Oh, I see.
I think my favorite mod, I'm still a fan of, like, the Team Fortress Classic, which was, you know, kind of back from the day. But
And is that Half-Life 2?
They actually have a Half-Life 2 version coming out, which is
It was originally
Team Fortress
Half-Life 2. 1, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's actually Half-Life 1 mod, yeah.
The cool thing about this new Half-Life 2 Team Fortress, it's actually they're launching a new parts of the Source engine they changed, and now the characters are going to be cartoon-like, like toon-shaded.
Cell-based, toon-shaded.
Wow,
yeah, it looks great.
Isn't it a lot of processing power to do cartoon-type animation? Well, Sean, you know a bit about graphics cards. Isn't rendering stuff that looks like cartoons more difficult than realism?
I don't know.
Okay,
I wouldn't think so because the lighting is actually a little less.
If you're running high dynamic range lighting,
high resolution, anti-aliasing, there's a bunch of these technologies that make games look better.
Mm-hmm.
But as for just a specific type of, you know, gaming engine being tougher than others, I don't know.
I meant more like the look, like a cartoony look is
a more realistic look with more polygons per character would certainly.
Of course, push your graphics card harder
because there's more geometry involved.
Do we have any more on-topic calls?
There was a story, a news story this past week about eBay has banned the auction of virtual goods.
Oh, really?
That was huge. So characters, currency, weapons, attire, counts of online games for World of Warcraft, City of Heroes,
We've talked a lot about this on GeekSpeak before. The idea is that people spend a lot of time creating these environments or acting in these environments, and they get rewards. Their characters get rewards, like a sword that does really amazing stuff.
And then they go on eBay and sell it.
And they sell it.
For real money for hundreds of dollars.
And so they made a real sale on eBay, hundreds of dollars, and then they meet up in the game, and the character hands the sword over to the other character, and then they say goodbye to each other, and then you have a real financial transaction over a virtual good.
So now you can't do that on eBay.
eBay doesn't do it. But there are third-party sites that still do it. And the game engines are starting to support this in-game. Yeah. So
and eBay is not banning Virtual World Second Life. Anything sold with...
Wow, yeah. And there's
Second Life
making,
is still okay.
Second Life...
First millionaire from Second Life. Just kind of talking about basically property management and dealing with property.
There's a millionaire that's generated their money from Second Life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it based on a dollar economy?
There is a total... monetary economy. They have their own Linden dollars or something.
What's the company we had on a while ago that had another game that was like that? It started with a P, I think. That had a dollar economy as well. I think it was a euro economy, actually.
I would check our site, but it's down.
Miles? No. Lyle? That's true. Our website's down, and therefore finding old shows is a lot harder.
Our server died.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess it had been... It had been pounded pretty hard for a couple of years.
Yeah, that machine had been up since 2002, serving content all the time.
Is it really that long?
We're doing an average of like 4 gigs a day. So it's like the machine was doing great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or was it 4 gigs a month? I think it was a day. All right, so we're taking...
Now I'm getting the evil eye from Sean.
I'm not getting the evil eye. I did my end.
Hey, but you know what? Right now, you can call in with questions and comments, like live, in person, and talk about 3D gaming. Right now. Just call 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. I know I've got those numbers memorized, but you probably don't, so I'm going to do them again nice and slow for you. 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll free anywhere in California, 1-800-655-KUSP. 1-800-655-KUSP. We're going to go ahead and take a call to people that have been very patient with us. Let's see, who do we still have? We've got Judith from Watsonville. Judith, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question today, Judith?
My question is about the upsides or downsides of partitioning a hard drive. I have a Macintosh iBook G4, and I'm considering partitioning it and putting a Tiger on one side and Panther on the other.
Oh, don't do that.
Don't do that.
No, just go to Tiger. Go to the newest version of the Macintosh OS because. Macintosh knows their hardware really well, and so the upgrade paths on Macs are restricted to just their hardware set, and they test it all very well. So unless you're doing something you know will not work on the most recent update operating system, and you can actually afford it, whatever, upgrade.
Well, I'm upgraded right now. I have both. You know, I upgraded from the Panther to Tiger, and the sync doesn't work in Tiger, and it did work in Panther.
The sync didn't work in Tiger, but it did work in Panther.
It did work in
Panther. And so you want to reinstall Panther to solve the problem?
That's what I was thinking.
And now, that I would solve the problem a different way. What is the syncing you're trying to do?
Well, it's with .Mac.
.Mac syncing's not working?
.Mac syncing my address book and my bookmarks.
Okay, so the settings are probably just incorrect. There's a few things.
No, if you go on the sites, the discussion sites, everybody is having trouble with it. I think Apple or .Mac is needing to work on whatever they're doing. I've done all the settings. I mean, I've done all kinds of troubleshooting. And I just remember it worked when I was in Panther, and it doesn't work when I'm in Tiger.
I don't pay for a .Mac account to do this, so I've never run into this problem. But I'm surprised that Apple has a problem of this magnitude running for Tiger.
It's .Mac seems to have it that, you know, that I just, yeah, so.
Hey, Alex, you're listening to us right now and on our chat. Have you found the problem? Let us know. All right, thank you so much. I don't have a better solution to you except for to say it will be really nightmarish to install both operating systems
on
the same.
Both operating systems.
Yeah, the way you'd want to do it, I guess, is to use... Oh, no, you can't use Boot Camp because you're not on Intel.
You can't use the problem is with Tiger, you can't use the old sync program that you used to use. You have to use the system preferences.
That's right. You have to use the new sync.
And it works sort of sometimes, and then it just last. I thought I had it working, then last
So maybe
night,
this is an example of upgrade paths not being as clean as fresh installs. I recently upgraded to Tiger, and when I migrated over, all my stuff worked. My sync settings worked, and it worked flawlessly. But I'm not using .Mac, so that could be a problem. The other thing is .Mac uses web dev uploading, and possibly something's going on with your router, but probably not. Thank you so much for the call. I'm sorry I'm not more helpful to you, except for to say I wouldn't try to install both operating systems on the same machine.
Okay. Thank you
so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
We're taking questions and comments about technology. We'd love to talk about 3D creation and game creation and game modding. From Boulder Creek, Fred, welcome to Geek Speak. Fred, did I surprise you?
Here I am.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, good. Hey, I love the idea of talking about the videoing.
Making movies and game engines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the last LAN party that you guys did, I videoed some great battles and fights and this and that going on. And... I love the artwork in the world of Warcraft. You know, that I could just roam around in there and just video all that stuff, like going on a hike somewhere. You know, can you take that video, or could it be imported into a movie that you're making?
Yeah, you mean like capture the screen content?
Yeah,
and use that
video
in a video
on the screen, and then import it into something like Final Cut Pro and use it in a.
How do you do that migration process?
Definitely. There's actually, if we're still talking Valve, they actually give you a tool.
What's Valve?
Valve is the company that develops Half-Life 2 and varying other games with the Source Engine. They have a tool called the Smoother, basically, that records all screen activity. You can record basically what are intended to be demos, you know, so you can show people what you're doing. But what's really powerful about them is they don't only capture what you're seeing on the screen. It's kind of a hard thing to grasp, but basically if you can imagine, you know, you're just watching someone play the game and you're watching them travel their path, shoot whoever they're shooting, do whatever they're doing in the game, you can have it basically recording everything that's happening within that environment everywhere. So then later you can actually step back once you're done, you stop the recording process, you step back, you can move the camera anywhere you want. So instead of following this character, you can actually have a third-person view of this character, or you can actually follow the person that's, you know, about to...
So
meet their demise.
This system's called what?
It's called the Smoother. Different tools.
And the Smoother, when you run a recorded session, it's not recording the actual pixels, it's recording the data that created the pixels.
Yeah, exactly.
So you then can modify the view.
Yeah, even the file size is like 100K. So
very small.
Yeah, it would clutter your hard drive.
So that would work in a Half-Life 2. Is there something like that for World of Warcraft, which Fred just mentioned? I don't think there is there?
You know, not that I know of. You know, as these tools become used for these type of activities, you know, that those companies will catch on and make them available.
There's a lot of software, Fred, there's a lot of software out there for capturing your screen as you're working, and it'll actually save, so it runs on the computer and it saves an image of whatever's being displayed on the screen. You see this a lot with screencasts as the technology's caused, mostly for demoing stuff, but you could theoretically run that and then run World of Warcraft and record everything you see. And a great way to do that is your character, you participate as just a camera operator, right? So you run around, you try not to engage in anything. And then the other people are actually the players in the piece. Miles, do you know any software for screen capturing casting?
Just the plain video camera works great.
Well, just capturing just videotaping the screen. You could, of course, do that. And then, of course, it's just video, and you can edit it anywhere you want.
And then can you use that, though, if you're going to produce a movie or enter into a...
Can you actually put...
Oh, you mean, is it copyrighted?
Can you actually put video inside of a game, maybe on a screen somewhere?
Fred, are you asking about the video footage you've captured? It's just like any other footage, so what's to stop you from using it in a film? Copyright issues?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I see.
Yeah. Good point. Okay, I was not thinking about the law there.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, you want to enter it in a film festival, but you need to have...
that's a little more clear.
What's going on with Machinima? There's a whole genre of film happening. Short films are being submitted to, you know, film festivals and stuff that have content that's created by this company or mod people. What's the deal?
So right now, I mean, most Machinima is not huge commercial success. So there's, you know, we're still kind of new territory.
Not yet. But when Fred makes a film...
That's what you're looking
okay,
for.
Okay, so how do you do
So right now, I mean, they're actually pretty forthcoming. I mean, they have... you know, all the on Valve's website, for one, you actually get the full legal breakdown of what you can and can't do. Basically, you can show anything you want, giving credit to the engine. It gets even a little easier if you've created all your own content, which is kind of the direction that we're trying to, you know, show people what you can do.
Sure.
Yeah. But, you know, if you were to sell it to Hollywood or something, I'm sure you'd have to deal with the creator of the engine, the game that you're working with, to work out some kind of deal. But, you know, it's really in their benefit to get it out there as well. So it's just that negotiation.
We should get Valve on the show. Doug Lombardi has told me he was interested in coming on. He's VP of Valve. I'll have to get back in touch with him.
I want to use this software, the training videos, to train myself and make geek models of all of us.
We actually got a call.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Hey, Fred, thank you so much for the call. Talk to you soon.
Bye. They want to know what the DVD is, what the name is.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about the product?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We got two right now. There's several more that'll be arriving real soon. The website is noesisinteractive.com.
Is your website functional?
It is functional.
Oh, nice.
There's a lot of stuff going on there. It's amazing.
Can you spell that for us?
Yeah, it's Noesis Interactive.com. And basically, the two products we have right now are 3D content creation with Half-Life 2. That's with XSI. I'm sorry, that's your first product, using the 3D software to create basically anything you want, but we're focusing on character development design. And the second product is character integration with Half-Life 2. And that's actually getting any of your creations into the game, running around playing, putting your own face inside the game. I mean, a variety of things you can do there.
How do you actually get your own face? You, like, take a face and you start trying to make it look like you?
It's actually pretty funny. You can take some digital photographs, you know, really any way you can get an image of yourself into the computer from a website, whatever. There's just a certain way that you have to lay it out on screen, a couple...
You go through that
flatten your face out and look
exactly
really weird.
You look really funny, but we go through that on the second disc.
And there's actually on our website, it's a free downloadable tutorial on how to create
how to do the face.
That's right.
Because that's a popular one. You want to get people hooked in. So on your website, Noesis Interactive, it's Noesis Interactive.com. You can see a demo of how to use this software. It's a video. You get to see, you know, could I take this on myself? And then, of course, if you take that on, you can go ahead and get more of their product and get a little bit better at training. I think making a person, your face on a character, we did it once for a game years ago. It was a kick. It was so fun to run around and see your friend's names and actually a picture of his face distorted on the wrong 3D map. So I'm assuming you changed the 3D structure, too.
Yep, we go through, actually, you know, how to do it quickly and then how to pretty it up a bit. But
Your site has a feel of Half-Life 2. It's really cool. I like it.
Cool. And Miles, what's happening tomorrow?
Sunday morning on This American Life on KUSP, an old man in Brooklyn invites some homeless prostitutes into his house on a cold winter night. They never leave. Plus other stories about houses, such as the United States Congress, where the inhabitants don't always act as they should. This American Life, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You know, House of Representatives not acting like they should. This project, Medavid, which is one of medavid.ucsc.edu, They're doing captures of all the House and Senate floor footage. It's one of the projects I support. Doing searches up there for like terms like peanut butter and seeing what the congressmen say, it's so surprising to see how inept these people are. It's amazing. There was one that was popular recently is a guy touting Klingons and Vulcans and how we want to be more like Vulcans and less like Klingons. And this is a representative of the House, you know, Congress. It's scary. Anyways, GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. We were talking today by the co-founders, if you will, of Noesis Interactive. That is Noesis Interactive.com, Antonio Govella and Case Noland. Thank you, guys. I hope that this is the start of a wonderful friendship because I enjoy your guys' company.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Love to have you on again. They have training DVDs for modding the games that you kids play and you could play. So please check them out again at NoesisInteractive.com. And thank you both for being here on GeekSpeak today.
Thank you.
I also want to thank the geeks. Sean Cleveland. Thank you, Sean, for being here every day to make GeekSpeak what it is.
Thank you, Lyle.
And the jobless Miles Elam, thank you so much for inspiring me by doing what you want to do in your life.
Which is absolutely nothing.
No, it's being a teacher, and it's really noble. And thank you so much for being here every week to make GeekSpeak what it is. And to those listening and calling into GeekSpeak, thank you so much for making GeekSpeak not just us geeking out, but actually your input. We really appreciate it. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Otto, on the web at kusp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and used by permission for KUSP and GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Thank you for joining us.